Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk joined by Paul Dottino. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or on Twitter, go to hashtag Giants Chat, and we can communicate with you that way as well. And Paul, the NFL season is over officially. Our final game was played, the Super Bowl, obviously, on Sunday with the Philadelphia Eagles winning their first ever Super Bowl championship. They have a couple NFL championships, yep, but their first ever Super Bowl championship. We will be joined today by former head coach of the Arizona Cardinals and former Pittsburgh Steeler offensive coordinator Bruce Arians. Why, you ask? Well, Bruce was the head coach with the Cardinals when Giants defensive coordinator James Betcher was a defensive assistant there and also a defensive coordinator there. So it'll be very important to get his insight on exactly what type of coach James Betcher is, what he likes to do, what he brings to the field, and all those things will be a good thing to talk to Bruce Arians about when hopefully he will join us in a couple of minutes. Paul, let's, in the meantime, talk a little bit about what's to come here. You would hope that you would think the Giants are hoping to fill out their assistant coaching staff relatively quickly here.
Yeah.
Now that everyone that could potentially be available to talk to is available to talk to.
Well, you're looking at the offensive coordinator spot and potentially a quarterback's coach if they're going to hire one. Now, you don't even know. Coach Pat Shurmur may just decide he doesn't need a quarterback's coach. So it kind of remains to be seen if there's really one or two spots reportedly still open. Again, I say reportedly because the Giants haven't announced hardly any of these assistant coaches yet. Through other channels, most of the names have already come out.
Yeah, no question about it. A lot of the names are out there. If you want to give us a call and talk about to them with us, you can. Of course, anything else on the docket, you can give us a call too at 201-939-4513. Let's talk about the game for a second, Paul. I haven't had a chance to kind of give my take on it quite yet since the game's been over. There are some things going on, obviously. I thought a couple interesting things in this game. Obviously, an NFL record for most yards in a single game, which comes in a Super Bowl, which is just insanity. And I think I read that lower third Chiron correct, right? It wasn't just record for most yards in a Super Bowl. It
most
was
yards,
most yards
in, a game.
And I'm sure, and I was actually sitting there, and I didn't see you tweet much during the game. I think you were on like...
I did not.
You did not. I got to imagine, Paul, that you weren't too thrilled about a defenseless Super Bowl. That doesn't seem like it's something that's up your alley.
What boggled my mind is how many times that Patriots receivers were wide open. The Eagles' defensive backs were nowhere to be found, nor were their linebackers on almost all those throws. Count the number of contested throws in the game. There may have been six or seven of them, and they were all contested throws by the Patriots' DBs. None by the Eagles' DBs, which didn't surprise me because I expected the Patriots to shred them, because Belichick was going to look at the film of what the Giants did to them twice. And although he didn't do as much hurry up as I thought, he went up and down the field against them. I expected that.
And
I didn't think the other would happen.
And the Eagles' secondary is vulnerable. It's been an issue all year.
Back seven is not good.
They got rid of the ball very quickly. They did all the things you would like to try to do to move the ball on the Philadelphia Eagles. Obviously, their pass-run ratio was very, very skewed, which is what you would expect in a game like that. We thought that going in. And I made the joke online to start the second half. I'm not sure if you saw my tweet. I go, so is this one of those games where the first team that punts loses? I'm not sure I've ever said that before. And by the way, I don't think either team punted in the second half, did they?
One punt in the game.
And that was in the first half. So neither team actually punted in the first half, which is a little bit crazy.
John, a lot of surreal things happened in this game. But, you know, Lance and I talked about it yesterday. I want to give you more of a chance to talk about the game than me because we've already gone through it. I would only say this. As crazy as it was, you know, to see the video game type atmosphere up and down, up and down, up and down, I want to reemphasize for maybe the last time because I'm tired of talking about it. All these postseason teams, what do? They make the plays for their quarterbacks. They make the contested throws. They make the hard catches. They make the plays for their QB to do something with the ball, to keep drives alive, to put themselves in scoring position. To me, that's probably the one thing I saw throughout this entire postseason, outside of when Kansas City kept bobbling the ball and dropping the ball in their playoff game, which is why they got knocked out. It's the biggest difference between the teams that go far in the postseason and the teams that don't. Just make the plays for your quarterback. Catch the ball.
And both teams, I thought, made some pretty tough contested catches.
One drop in the game.
Yeah.
Aguilar. That's it.
It was a very well-played offensive game, needless to say. And it's funny, Doug Peterson's getting a lot of credit, and he deserves a lot of credit. Made a lot of gutsy decisions. I'll call them risky decisions. I think a couple of them, quite frankly, were almost too risky, and I would not have taken those chances. And people love them because they work. But operating that way will cost you some games. But since the plays worked when he took those chances in this game, it paid off for him, and he deserves credit for that. But because he was extremely, extremely aggressive. It almost bit him in the rear end, going for that two-point conversion early and chasing the points, where it could have been a two-possession game late instead of a one-possession game when the Pages got the ball back at the end of that contest.
You know what's funny about that, though? Because I think he knew that he was up against it. When you're going up against the Patriots dynasty, you better take chances.
Yeah, but don't chase
it's
points.
Do or die.
Don't chase points that early, Paul.
You know,
you can chase them later.
I didn't have as much a problem with it, but ultimately, I mean, I remember when Parcells went for the fake punts. You know, I remember doing that in the Super Bowl and in a playoff game. Sometimes you just know. You know what? That's it. Throw it all against the wall. We're going for broke. This is it, baby. And just do it.
You can go for two at any time when you score. That isn't a situation where, well, I don't know if we're going to be inside the five again. We got to do it. To me, and I don't care how you think the game's going to go, I will not go for a two-point conversion before the fourth quarter.
Okay.
It's just part of what I do.
It's
how I would manage it. A couple other things I thought were interesting. I know there was some debate, and this is just little things that I picked up during the game that I thought were kind of nitpicking, but I thought were interesting topics that no one's really brought up yet. Paul, number one, I thought a lot of people were prematurely critical, and of course nobody cared afterwards because they won, of Peterson for not trying to throw the ball for the first down on that third and five towards
right.
the end of the game. The play there wasn't to throw it on third and five right after the two-minute warning. The Patriots actually made, which for Bill Belichick is rare, a timekeeping mistake in that situation. They called a timeout with 2 minutes and 3 seconds remaining in that game, and that to me is an error. Because saving those 3 seconds put the Eagles in a position where they could have thrown the ball on second down in that spot, and even though there could be an incomplete pass, the clock would have stopped anyway because they were so close to the 2 minute warning at 2 minutes and 3 seconds. And that to me was actually a mistake by Peterson not throwing the football there, because on second and eight, at New
England's
29,
blunt run.
With 2 minutes and 3 seconds to go in the game, even if you throw an incomplete pass there, the clock's stopping at the two-minute warning anyway. So there's really no downside to it. So if you run play action there, Paul, I guarantee you the Patriots are looking for the run. I think the Eagles could have just ended the game right there, gotten the first down, and the Patriots never would even have gotten the ball back to begin with. So I thought that was another little small micro play within the game that I thought was very interesting.
You know what's funny about that? See, I did something that I haven't been able to do in more than three decades. I actually sat in my parents' living room and watched the Super Bowl with my father. Haven't done that since 1983. That's how many years it's been, because I've always worked it, either at the newspaper or doing broadcasting with the Giants. So this was a weird thing for me. So I put that phone down. That's it. Unless it was ringing, I was not touching Twitter. My dad and I, we enjoyed some pizza pie.
It's great.
And just watched the game.
That sounds wonderful.
And I did say to him, I said, you know what? I'm almost wondering if the Eagles might even go for that third down.
Ooh. That, you know what? At that
fourth
part of the
down.
Field,
that
it,
fourth
it
down.
Wasn't an impossible situation. And we'll get to more of the game in just a second. But now we'll be joined by our guest. He's Bruce Arians. He was the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals before he announced his retirement just a few weeks ago. He joined us on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com to discuss his defensive coordinator and the new defensive coordinator for the New York Football Giants, James Betcher. Coach Arians, you got John Schmelk and Paul Dottino here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Thanks for stepping off the golf course. I appreciate the sacrifice. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. I just wish I was putting a little better.
Trust me. I know where you're coming from. A couple questions, Coach. Let's start with this. What type of coach is James Betcher? Is he a fire and brimstone yeller type coach, or is he more of a low-key communicator type coach, or do you think it's not fair to put him into either one of those corners of the quote-unquote coach personality chart?
Yeah, I think he's a unique personality. He's got both. He's a great teacher, great communicator in the classroom. Now, if it's not done right, he can get real demanding. That's the way coaches should be. As long as players don't take it as criticism, they just take it as coaching, and they'll be fine.
What is it about him, Bruce, that prompted you to promote him to defensive coordinator after Todd Bowles left? And did you have any conversations with Pat Shurmur when he was trying to fill that spot? He obviously told us that he remembers playing the Cardinals and having just a horrible time against those defenses. That's kind of what caught his eye. But were you at all given any conversation or any thoughts about bringing him over here with Pat Shurmur?
Yeah, I talked to Pat a couple of times, and, you know, just to reemphasize how good he is. And the job he did was, I mean, it speaks for itself. We went from struggling early this year because of lack of communication to being one of the top 10 defenses the last half of the season. And it's all because Betch and his ability to teach and continue the game plan and get guys in the right position to be successful.
And I know, obviously, Coach, he runs a traditional base 3-4 defense. Pat Shurmur was asked about that at his introductory press conference, and he said, well, you know what, it's more of a multiple defense, and you're a nickel so much that base front really doesn't matter so much. I looked at the tape. I saw a lot of plays in passing situations where he only is two traditional defensive linemen on the field. How would you discuss his philosophy in terms of his odd and even fronts and how he likes to use personnel up front?
Well, the biggest thing is start with pressure. He's going to go after people. He's going to put pressure on the quarterback in all situations. Very, very hard to run the ball against this defense, having gone against it myself for 5 years. And, you know, so it's going to be pressure. It depends a lot on the corners, how much man-to-man versus zone, because we played both, but we drafted our guys to play man-to-man. And not let a quarterback dink and dunk us. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure. He can switch. Even in the base front, the R3-4 become 4-3 a lot of times easily. And that's the hard thing. They got so many multiple fronts that he can play and utilize that personnel they have up there.
Coach, you mentioned pressure, and I just want to kind of piggyback on that point for a second. His blitz percentages the last three seasons have gone down a little bit, as has the number, at least from last year to this year, the amount of man-to-man you played. Was that more a product, you think, of game situations where, you know, a lot of times coaches will be a little bit more aggressive when you have leads more often? Do you think that was more based on game situations or personnel or a philosophy change?
More personnel. Front four was getting there. You know, Chandler Jones and the crew, they were getting after the quarterback. So when you have front four that can get home, you don't have to blitz as much. You just blitz for fun.
Well, you know, Bruce, I want to talk about that for just a second. Again, Bruce Arians, retired Arizona Cardinals head coach, joins us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. I'd like you to, if you can, describe for me how you think the key pieces to the Cardinals defense can be translated when we look at the Giants defense. I mean, I think that Olivier Vernon can be a Chandler Jones type. I think that Janoris Jenkins can be a Patrick Peterson type, and so forth and so on. Could you maybe identify for me two or three or even four key players that you think will translate well on the Giants roster to what the Cardinals system was under Betcher?
I think you take that entire front four and start with the safety.
Collins.
I mean, Landon Collins is a bigger, stronger Tyrann Mathieu. He can do everything. And that's one of the key things, is having a multiple position safety that you don't know if he's playing man, zone, middle of the field, blitzing, and having those two safeties that can play multiple positions. Obviously, the corners are, you know, both those kids can play. Janoris can play man-to-man. Eli Apple can play man-to-man. I mean, he was a heck of a player coming out of college. So I think the pieces are there to be multiple. You don't have to sit back and just say, hey, we're this or that. That's the beauty of Betch's defense. You really don't know what you're getting week to week.
Yeah, yeah, coach, and it's funny. I saw the same thing when I went back and I watched some of your games this year. In some situations, you know, Deion Buchanan and Buda Baker were really playing almost inside linebacker positions in weird nickel or, you know, dime situations, depending on how you want to classify personnel. How important is it for his scheme to have those athletic guys in the middle of the field that can not only tackle in the running game, but also drop back in coverage if you have to, if teams decide to run play action on you or throw it on second, third, and long?
Yeah, I think that's the critical thing, speed at linebacker. You know, Deion Buchanan, we drafted as a safety. He became the sort of the first hybrid small inside linebacker who can cover tight ends, cover backs, and still be physical enough. And that's that Buda Baker is that type of safety I'm talking about. You know, you're going to have two or three of those, and that you never know where those three guys are. But defining that speed linebacker, if say there was one deficiency of watching – the Giants, when we played them, is that linebacker core needed to be upgraded a little bit.
Well, let me ask you this. How much freedom did you give him? Was he given total control of the defense, or did you have some input on that as well? I guess I'm kind of curious because we're talking about all this creativity. I'd like to know how much of that was actually generated from his own playbook.
No, it's all his. The only time I clicked over on that side, they knew I would play. I want to blitz everybody on the field, play cover zero. Well, I just had a certain look on my face when I looked down there. It's time to send them all. But no, I never had anything to do with the game plan, the personnel, the way, you know, they asked me some questions. How tough is this? And being an offensive coach, you say, oh, shit, that's going to be really hard. And, you know, so that's my input.
Coach, final one for me, or I should say next to last one for me. For an offense, I know you mentioned his ability to stop the run and then pressure. What else about his defense stands out that really makes it difficult for an offense to consistently move up and down the field against? Because if you look at simple production against your Cardinals defense the last 3 years, it was always in the top 10, sometimes in the top 5. Teams just couldn't sustain long drives against you guys.
Yeah, third down foot. We spent a lot of time on third down football and red zone off, obviously. But third down, you got to get teams off the field. And we weren't very good early in the year because of that lack of communication with three new guys. And then they got so much better and really were tough at the end. I think we had more three and outs maybe than anybody in the league the last five games.
And, Bruce, let me ask you this. He's coming to New York, which we all know is the media capital of the world. The spotlight is hotter here than it is anywhere else. How will he adapt to the pressure of New York? And the expectations here are high. The Giants anticipate that they're going to be able to make a quick turnaround with the changes that they've made.
Oh, I don't think I have any problem whatsoever. He's got a great personality. Not afraid to answer any question. And, you know, he'll adapt fine because – you know, like I said, I got the same expectations as you have. I think with Pat running that offense and Betts running the defense, the Giants are going to be somebody to deal with quickly next year.
I almost, looking at the tape, Coach Arians, drawn by Bruce Arians, former coach of the Arizona Cardinals, it looked like it almost didn't matter to him if his rushers on the side, whether it's Chandler Jones or Hassan Reddick, he didn't really mind if they either had their hand in the dirt or they stood up. It's almost as though he let them on certain plays, if they were more comfortable, to stand up and rush, do it that way. Did he have a preference for his, you know, defensive end slash 3-4 outside linebackers rush with their hand in the dirt, or did he like them standing up?
Well, that's one of the things that made him very, very valuable to me when he started coaching Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis in Indianapolis, who were defensive ends and turned them into linebackers. And then John Abraham, who was one of the greatest sackers ever, came to us and he turned him into a linebacker. So once those guys found sight lines that they like standing up, they could always put their hand in the ground and go. But once you stand up and get your sight lines and you get a good get off, they don't know if you're dropping rushing, so it adds more to the defensive position, his flexibility as a rusher.
Well, Bruce, congratulations on a great career. We hope your health is well, and we hope you enjoy retirement, whether that be golf or the broadcast booth or whatever you decide to do.
Well, I hope it's a combination of those two, and I am healthy, so I'm having a hell of a good time right now.
Coach, I know you have a relationship with Pat Shurmur. Just want to ask your opinion on him really, really quick before we say goodbye to you. It seems to me, watching what he's done in Minnesota this year, that he picked up a lot of stuff from Chip Kelly and from North Turner, who was in Minnesota, and his offense has really evolved since he was a traditional West Coast guy under Andy Reid. Have you watched a lot of his stuff with the Vikings this year in the postseason, end of the year? And do you think he's really adjusted and added a lot of that stuff from those two most recent coaches he was with?
Yeah, I think one of his forte is he puts an offense for his personnel. And I think that's really good coaching. When you don't just have a system and run your system. I got these players. How the heck can I get them guys scoring points? And that's what Pat does. I mean, he took each one of those quarterbacks, and he fit and tailored the offense to him. Lost his running back and kept on going. That's a telltale sign of a hell of an offensive coach.
Hit him long, hit him straight, Coach. We appreciate it. Thank you so much for the time today. Enjoy
Thank you,
your back nine.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
That's Bruce Arians, former head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Does an excellent, excellent job. And don't be surprised to see him on a TV near you next football season.
Sounded like that. And I don't think you could get any less of a recommendation for James Betcher as a coordinator. Everything that he said was just glowing. And, you know, I will tell you, John, it continues to boggle my mind at how a gentleman of Betcher's age, only 39, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. He seems to have this innate ability to blend and mix and meatloaf and morph all of these different philosophies of many different styles of defense into this fluid type of scheme, which, I'll be honest, you don't expect that of a guy of that young an age. You think, well, you know, if it's a Bud Carson or if it's, you know, somebody who's been in the league for 30 years, okay, maybe, you know. But a guy who's only 39 years old, it's like, how did he get all of this experience and knowledge?
And
how?
You got to think.
It's amazing.
That the reason he was maybe overlooked for a head coaching job this offseason, well, A, and he did interview in Arizona when they changed their guy. But I think Arizona probably wanted to just go in a different direction than where they've been, which you understand. Sometimes teams want to just do that, you know, change for the sake of change. I think there's so much obsession right now with finding the right offensive coach in a lot of ways that I think sometimes the defensive guys maybe get overlooked a little bit. Because I'll be honest, based simply on defensive success, throwing the overall winning out of the resume, it's hard not to say that he hasn't had more success managing a defense than a Matt Patricia.
You're right. And oh, by the way, to everyone who wants to have an offensive coach, if they had played a little defense on Sunday, that would have been the team to win the game.
And that's just, you know what? And I'll say this, too. He was only a coordinator for 3 years. That's not a long time to be a coordinator before you become a head coach, so I understand that, too.
But his body of work seems as though he's had more experience than that.
And it's funny, Andy Benoit, who writes for Monday Morning Quarterback and SI.com, he does a lot of their X's and O's and film stuff, and he actually had an interesting article. It was either end of December or beginning of January where his dark horse head coaching candidate was actually Betcher this year.
No kidding.
Because he thought, because of all the success, young, everyone speaks well of him. He actually had McVay last year before he got hired by the Rams. So just something to get out there. And I was very excited about Betcher when I heard about him. I think he's a great hire. And I think the important points that I took out of the interview, Paul, were a few. They didn't blitz as much because Chandler Jones was a machine and got to the quarterback on his own, which is, by the way, when I watched the tape, absolutely accurate. So that's number one. Number two, wants to play man-to-man, generally speaking. And number three, his defense was helped a lot by the versatile personnel that the Cardinals had on the defensive side of the ball. From Buchanan, a linebacker, to Teron Matthew and Buda Baker in the secondary, who, by the way, also can play a little corner for Matthew and play a little linebacker for Buda Baker, and throw even Hassan Reddick, who can be a stand-up rusher or a pass rusher. Mm-hmm. And the last point I think that was important is that he wants his rushers to stand up because it will leave more questions for the offense as to who's coming and who's not. Those are my three big takeaways from that interview that I thought were interesting.
And I think the only thing that I could ascertain from what he said is the Giants better get some more guys for the back seven.
Speed linebackers, he said it multiple times. and B.J. Goodson's a good run stuffing linebacker, but he ain't running a 4.5.
As you said, and I believe Bruce confirmed, but we've seen it on the film and discussed this on the show before, he will play DBs as pseudo linebackers.
Correct.
So you know what? It means you better stack up on depth at safety, and you better stack up on depth at linebacker. Those two positions become very fluid in this man's defense. You better have some very quick, agile guys playing those positions, or he's going to be limited in what he does.
And Landon Collins could be one of those guys.
Yes, he can.
He has the muscle to stop the run, and obviously he has a lot of abilities at safety to run around and do what he needs to do with that position. That's his natural position. I wonder what they're going to do with Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie. Because even last year under Steve Spagnuolo, and I know he's older, and you know Tyrann Mathieu's a younger guy, but Mathieu's a guy that they used at safety and as a cover corner. And you could try to confuse the defense with that. Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie played both spots last year for the Giants. Now, he's not going to be able to play the number of snaps that Tyrann Mathieu played because he's on the other side of 30, and they've already tried to limit his snaps the last couple of years a little bit.
Right.
But I wonder, we'll see what happens with the salary cap and all that stuff. I wonder if he's one of the guys that could be one of the versatile players that you could move around a little bit if you wanted to.
I don't think there's any doubt, which is why, in my mind, even with the cap included in the equation, I think DRC has to be a returnee because with this guy's scheme, Betcher's scheme, Mathieu played three positions. He played outside, he played slot, and he played safety.
Correct.
He played three spots on that team.
And what could DRC do?
All three spots. So to me, you know, and I left before last season when the writers were already saying that he had to be gone. He was a cap casualty. No way he's going to come back. I thought that was ridiculous. Of course, he came back, and I think DRC actually played real well this year.
Yeah,
he got
okay.
Lost in their record, but he played really well. He's still got a lot of football left in him, and with Betcher's scheme, I think he is definitely one of those key components that I tried to talk to Bruce about when I started naming some of the guys who can mirror those positions. Vernon's one, Collins is one, DRC is one, Jenkins is one. They're all guys who have very specific key roles in this morphing kind of defense.
Yeah, I agree, and I also think in terms of the press man that he likes to play, I think Jenkins and Apple both go into that classification. Now we'll see what happens with Eli Apple. You know, who knows how that situation is going to play itself out. But I think
Cockrell can play man. Don't discount him.
He can. Absolutely.
He can do it.
He's actually better a man than he is a zone,
yes,
which is one of the reasons why the Steelers let him go.
That
They're
is
more
correct.
Of a zone team. You wonder, or I should say this, I believe that if they're able to, you know, rehabilitate Eli Apple, for lack of a better word, and try to make him a big part of this team again after what happened end of last year, this is a good scheme for him to do it in because he's a long, fast corner that should excel in that press man environment. So we'll see what they do with him.
I'm going to give you two names who should probably love Betcher. Avery Moss.
Stand-up rusher.
Should love Betcher's scheme.
Agree.
And Andrew Adams. Pseudo linebacker. Safety who plays pseudo linebacker.
He's more of a center fielder type, though. And he's even said to me before that
hits.
He's more comfortable playing deep than he is near the line.
But he hits.
He does.
He's a good tackler. He hits. He's physical. He's a good tackler. Those two guys may benefit quite a bit from what Betcher's doing, especially since the Giants don't have depth behind those guys to play those positions. Okwara is nothing physically like Avery Moss. They're totally different types of players. Okwara is a traditional defensive end.
Right.
He's not going to stand up. He's not going to do any of that pseudo linebacker stuff that Moss can do. And Darian Thompson doesn't have the physicality to play like Andrew Adams does at safety.
Or the consistency as a tackler, for that matter.
Physicality. So I think those two guys could benefit a lot. Just saying.
It'll be interesting to see what the Giants front office, with the guidance of Jim Betcher, obviously, who will be their defensive coordinator, what they do on that side of the ball. Again, we thank Coach Bruce Arians for joining us, former head coach of the Cardinals, of course, offensive coordinator for the Steelers for a good part of their mid-2000s Super Bowl run. I think 2007 to 2011 he was there. So we appreciate him joining us. Now let's get to your calls the rest of the way at 201-939-4513. Tony in D.C. joins us next. Hi, Tony. How are you?
Hey, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Hello. Thanks for calling in, Tony. What's up?
So two things. One for Paul, and I think it was Russ that he was with. They made a very good point that I had considered but not fully considered. And
okay.
This is in regards to quarterback and drafting one at two. The point that they made and that we have to consider also regarding that is how long will Eli be the starter? If it's 1 year, that's one thing. But if we're talking 2 or 3 years, I have to say, is the value of sitting a guy that long worth it? And don't get me wrong. I mean, that's for Webb, too. I don't want to see Webb sit for that long. Like, we're talking 3-4 years. You know, into his career where you're sitting waiting for your shot. And so it might not be worth it. So if that's the case, then, yeah, even though I'm still in the quarterback train, I would trade the pick if we're going to have the guy sitting for years upon years.
Tony, my opinion on this is right now the Giants, in terms of their quarterback position, with Eli at the age that he's at, I think you almost have to treat it as a year-to-year proposition. Depending on how it goes. Look, he has 2 years left on his deal. So if you want to look at it as a 2-year proposition, I think that makes a lot of sense too. But you know how things in the NFL can change, obviously. But I think if you believe, and I'm on the same train with you, if you believe that one of the guys available to you at two, and that's what Dave Gettleman and Pat Shermer and the scouting staff all agree, that this guy can be your quarterback for the next 12 to 15 seasons, do not let whether or not he's going to be on the field those first 2 years affect whether or not you're going to select that player. That's the way I look at it.
And I hear you, but boy, that's a long time to sit.
Two years isn't that long, man.
A long time.
Tony, I want to ask you something. Do you think the Packer fans are sitting there saying, "Damn, I wish we didn't have Aaron Rodgers sit behind Brett Favre for 3 years"?
I know, but man, when you look at that, and I agree with you, and that's what I try to think about. But remember, Aaron Rodgers was drafted the year after Eli Manning. That was a long time ago, and people were still complaining that he sat too long. So I hear you, but I'm just saying I am a bit more flexible if we're talking sitting somewhere. And I don't want to see Webb sit that long either. I want to see him get a shot at some point.
Hey, look, Tony, I would agree. I would say if it's more than 2 years, I'm with you. 2 years wouldn't bother me, but I will say this. In that second year, if you're still committed to Eli Manning at that point, as an organization, you're going to have to put the earmuffs on a little bit. Because as Paul can attest to, there's going to be a lot of chatter out there, especially if the team isn't winning a lot of games. Let's move on. This guy's sitting there. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. That's something you're going to have to prepare yourself for when you go into this, if you do, in fact, draft a quarterback at two. So that is part of the equation.
Yeah. And my second question, and I'll take whatever you guys can give on this one.
Yes.
So the GM wants to talk about, as he said, not shopping hungry, which makes a lot of sense. And the big prospect out there, quarterback aside, is Le'Veon Bell.
No.
So,
No. Stop, Tony. Stop for a second. Do you want to sign any offensive lineman in free agency?
No. Look, I like Nate Solder. Let's put Nate Solder in perspective. He looks like the next coming because of our offensive line issues, and he can play.
How about
but
guards?
Nate Solder is not going to is not an all pro Pro Bowler year in year out. He is a solid left tackle. We could use him, no debate. But he's not Joe Thomas coming over here.
Tony,
that's what I'm saying.
I'm going to give you some life advice when it comes to running backs in the NFL. If they're older than 27 years old or 28 years old, don't throw a lot of money at him. His odds are you're not going to get a full return on your investment at that position.
Hey, look, I am with you. He's 26, and I'm with you. That's why I'm not big on drafting running backs early. But I'm trying to split the baby with all my fellow Giants fans. They're so dedicated to Saquon Barkley. I'm like, well, how about we get a big-name running back and we get some linemen and a quarterback? But I want to hear you guys' thoughts on what free agents should we really be looking at, and I'll take you offline. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Well, he'll be – you know what? He must have came out really young because he's 25 and will turn 26 on February 18th, but he has a lot of mileage on him.
With the kind of money he wants anyway, I wouldn't touch him with a 50,000-foot ball.
Let me put it this way. I'll put it this way to you folks, too. If you're going to go pay Le'Veon Bell all that money – you can't pay Odell Beckham Jr. all that money, too. You can't pay a running back and a receiver at the top of their position. It's not possible with the salary cap.
The skill position guys make that very impossible.
Correct.
So, I mean, I look, Tony, I appreciate that you're laughing about it because obviously you understand as well as we do that that's just, you know, that's comic book material right there. But anyway.
He was drafted at 21, so he was a younger,
younger
draftee.
Comic book material.
And he's been in the league for 5 years. And in those 5 years, he already has 1,230 carries and 300 catches. So that's a lot of touches.
Indeed.
A lot of touches. And he has had some injuries, too, now. He hasn't played 16 games every year, either.
The problem with the Steelers, if I understood him correctly the last time he talked about it, was that he was after a bigger guarantee.
Of course.
No kidding. He's a running back.
It's always the trick, isn't it?
He's a running back. He's going to want the biggest guarantee he can get his hands on, and the Steelers are going to be saying, well, we've given you the ball about 50 million times in the last 4 years. We're not interested in giving you a huge guarantee.
Correct. And by the way, and there were some whispers that he might consider retiring if he doesn't, if he gets franchised again.
Sure.
Yeah, he's going to give up that $17 million guaranteed from signing the franchise tag and retire. Might he hold out a little bit? Absolutely. Absolutely. I would not be surprised if he didn't show up until maybe even October.
Yeah, right.
If they franchise him again. I'm serious. But trust me, he ain't retiring.
No.
He ain't retiring. 201-939-4513. Justin, who's a Giants fan that apparently has survived the Super Bowl celebration in Philadelphia unscathed. Did you climb up one of those trees and just watch the chaos underneath you, Justin?
Oh, more so I went underneath my bed and hid.
Good idea.
With the lights off, I'm sure.
Yes.
I can tell you it's pretty miserable being a Giants season ticket holder and being in Philly normally, and never mind after this past weekend, but I'm somehow surviving. Your guys' show helped me get through.
Well, thank you.
Paul, quick story for you. I met you, it was a while ago. It was actually Kenny Phillips' rookie year.
Okay.
And you guys were doing a show up in Albany, and I think my dad and I were like the only fans there. You guys were interviewing Kenny, and you were just really, really nice to me and my dad, and I always appreciated that.
Sure thing. That was when I was with ESPN in those days, I believe.
Yeah.
What's that?
That's when I was with ESPN in those days. We did the interview right outside the football field, outside the athletic facility.
Yep.
Remember.
And last year, or 2016 season, my sister and I went to a game, and I yelled out to you what your prediction was. They were playing the Eagles, and you came and gave us like 10 minutes of your breakdown. So I always appreciated that as well.
Well, Justin, by the way, I want to say one thing real quickly, Justin. Paul should be thanking you because on game day, he's looking for anybody that he can get his energy out to and talk to the game about. So he should really be thanking you for indulging his psychoticness for 10 minutes on a game day.
I am laser focused on game day. So the fact that you were able to get my attention in itself is a Herculean feat.
Exactly. Well, one point I want to make, and I'm a first-time caller, actually, but the one point I wanted to make is, John, I kind of agree with you as far as this second pick and probabilities. I think if you take a quarterback with the number two pick, you create a greater probability that you have the franchise quarterback in the organization this year. Whether or not that is Davis Webb or quarterback X, you know, I think creating competition is going to be what's best for the Giants. I think, you
can't
know,
hurt.
Paul, if Davis Webb is the kind of player that you say that he is and the kind of mentality that you say he is, then give him some competition.
I mean, look, I'm not changing my stance on this. You know how I feel.
Right.
I want to get more prospects. Trade the pick, get me more bodies who are going to help this team over the next 2 years, which I think Eli probably has 2 years. I don't think he's going to be done after 18. I know it's a year-to-year proposition. I agree with John. You can't count your chickens before they hatch. But based on physically how Eli is right now, I don't think it's a stretch to think he might even finish out his contract in 19.
Even more logical, it's his contract. He has 2 years left on his deal. So if you want to assume he's going to be here for 2 years, I think that makes a lot of sense. I have no argument with that.
Now, given that, if I can go get four premium picks and get four guys who are going to contribute over the course of these next 2 years to help make the Giants a playoff team, I'm doing it.
And I'd be okay with that, assuming you aren't really sold on one of these guys. And I know you aren't.
I'm not.
Right. Right. And do you guys think that, you know, even with picking up, you know, a bunch of picks, that this team can be competitive with, you know, the likes of the Eagles, who I'm assuming are going to be just as good, if, you know, as they were this year with an MVP caliber quarterback?
Did you hear Bruce Arians just about 15 minutes ago? He said he thought the Giants were going to turn it around real quickly. He said it right away. He told that, and we didn't ask him that. I just said they're expecting to, and he said, I couldn't agree more. I think with Betcher there and Shermer there, Giants are going to be a team to reckon with this year.
Yeah, and I think you used the right word, Justin. You asked if they're going to be competitive. Yeah, they're absolutely going to be competitive. Is anybody going to predict them to win the Super Bowl next year?
No.
No, they're not.
Can't do that off a three-win season.
You're coming off a three-win season. But, yes, there's no reason why this team cannot be competitive and be in the mix for a playoff spot throughout the year next year if they do the right things this offseason and catch a little bit more luck on the injury front come next year.
Just remember, the Jaguars won three games last year, too, and see how far they got this year.
Yeah, they were also stockpiling top 10 picks for 5 years.
Point is,
Let's hope we're not in that position.
No, exactly.
Quicksand of mediocrity. Anything can happen.
Absolutely. Thank you, Justin.
Exactly. All right, thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
Good call, and don't be a stranger. Excellent caller. Abdul in Minneapolis, he's up next. Hi, Abdul.
Hey, guys, what's up?
We're great. How are you?
Yeah, I finally survived this week. It's kind of insane. You know, we had Dan Patrick and Rich Eisen filming out of my building. So I had some interesting elevator rides with Michael Irving and Von Miller and other folks.
My understanding, Abdul, is that the city of Minnesota did an excellent job hosting the game.
Yeah, we did. You know, I live right across the street from the stadium, so I was right in the middle of it all. So from what I saw, they did a really good job. The crowds were pretty cool. Eagle fans, believe it or not, behaved. And, you know, it was a little colder than people would have liked, but it's Minnesota, man. You know?
Yeah, you kind of know what you're getting into when you destination is Minneapolis on the map, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, it was a really cool week. It was really cool experiencing Super Bowl for the first time, you know, and living right here. So it was definitely a cool thing. So anyway, I'm wondering what the salary cap is like this year. Could we sign like a top tackle and give or is one two thing? Because, you know, I definitely think we need a tackle. It's, you know, of course we do. That's without argument. But I think that Beckham has overplayed his rookie contract, and he deserves the financial security and disrespect from the Giants. So you think the Giants could do both?
I think the Giants have enough cap space to sign one top-end player that's not on the roster in free agency. More than one is tough. But I think, you know, depending on how they, you know, work the cap and work their roster, they can find enough money, in my opinion, I think, to sign one really good top player, whether that's a tackle or even one of the top guards on the free agent market. They should be able to find enough money for one of those guys.
Yeah, I would think
and
so, too.
Also pay Beckham, too.
Well, remember, Beckham might just be an extension, so he might play under his current contract for this year and then be extended after that. So even if he gets a new deal, it might not affect his cap number for 2018.
The other thing they could do, they could sign him to an extension but convert a bunch of this year's money into a signing bonus. That would lower his cap number this year significantly.
Correct.
While then spreading money out over the extension. They
then
could
again,
do that, too.
Given how big that signing bonus is,
it's going to be nasty.
It might not be that much lower.
It's going to, yeah. I'll be honest with you. I personally, if it were me, and I'm not speaking for the guys upstairs because I don't have a right to do that. If it were me, Odell Beckham's got to get on the field and prove to me he's still Odell Beckham after a very significant surgery before I throw any big money in
him. Yeah, Abdul, here's the thing. I just think it's going to be a very I hope it works out. I hope it works. But I think it's a very difficult situation because, as Paul said, Beckham's coming off an injury. But I'm sure Beckham doesn't want to get paid like he's coming off an injury. So is the Giant front office really going to make him the highest paid non-quarterback in football coming off an ankle surgery that's fairly serious? I don't know. So I think it might be tough for those two sides to meet in the middle this particular offseason because of the injury concern.
Yeah. I think the only way he gets redone or extended during this calendar year is if he goes out there, proves that he's still Odell Beckham Jr., okay, that he's still 95 to 100% of what he's supposed to be. Who knows? Maybe he's going to be better. I don't know that.
Right.
Once he proves that, now if you say to me, oh, in the middle of October, middle of the season, right, the Giants do something with him, I would not be shocked. But I would be shocked if they did it before then.
Fair enough. Great answer. And one more question. Do you think Devon Kennard could fit into this new defense?
Yes, I think he actually fits better into this defense than he did the Giants' other defense. To me, his best position is a 3-4 stand-up outside linebacker.
That's the good news. Yeah, that's the good news. The bad news is his coverage skills and his athleticism probably not as good as Avery Moss. I think Moss might have more flexibility.
I don't know if Avery – maybe Moss is 20 pounds heavier than him, isn't he?
I think he's got more flexibility, and he certainly has a wider wingspan, which can help passing lanes or even in small coverage situations.
Thank you, Abdul. I appreciate it. I don't think you can ask either one of those guys to cover for you, to be quite honest.
No, that's a dangerous thing to do. I don't think there's any question about that.
I wouldn't put any of those guys out there on a running back or a tight end.
But, again, you're talking about Moss being a lot cheaper than Devon Kennard. Well, and the finances will come into play, too. And I don't know if you can have two of those guys.
I don't know how much what his demand is going to be in the open market either.
I don't know either.
We'll have to see.
I don't know.
Jason, he's in Maine. How are you, Jason?
Good. How are you guys?
We're great.
Hello.
Jason. How are you?
Good. A couple questions for you. First, I didn't get to hear the show yesterday, so I was just wondering what you guys thought of that Beckham Eli commercial.
Oh, it was funny. I talked to a couple fans that were like, making fools of themselves, the Eagles in the Super Bowl, and you guys are dancing around. To me,
it was supposed to be funny.
It's everybody. What I liked about it the most, Jason, it was a team thing. Those are real offensive linemen that were in that shot.
Well, Landon except
Collins
for number 60.
Except for number 60. And Landon Collins was there. And, Beckham and Eli were just having fun. And that's fun. Sports is supposed to be fun. They're allowed to have fun. Now, if that happened after a Giants touchdown, Paul might have a problem with it. But on a commercial, he's okay.
Absolutely agree 100%. They could do it on a commercial all they want. Just don't do it on game day.
I think you guys should work up something here on the air someday.
Hey, you know what? I think I could actually hold Lance over my head. So I think that's the only combination that works. Because me jumping into Meadow, he would just be flattened. It would not go well for him.
Oh, my.
Okay. I just have a question. Maybe it's too early to ask this, but
go ahead.
I'm just curious in the quarterback situation. Why is it, and I know there's off-the-field stuff that you have to consider, but besides that, why is it that Baker Mayfield's not the number one quarterback? Is there something about him that makes him drop back in the scales of rankings of quarterbacks this year?
6'3" That's his height. That is what's keeping him out of the number one spot. If you honestly, Jason, even with the off-the-field stuff, in my opinion, if he was 6'3" or 6'4", Baker Mayfield's the first overall pick in this draft, and there's not even a question about it. And whoever gets him would get a hell of a player.
Yeah, the counter to that is look at Drew Brees.
No, look, there are exceptions to every rule.
And that's what it is, though. He's right. It's the measurables. Besides, I do think there are some folks who question maybe some of the off-the-field
maturity
attitude.
Maturity and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Just one last question for you. Just for your guys' opinion, as far as skill set and all that, and if you were able to put aside the field issues, what quarterback in that draft coming up do you guys think would best suit the Giants? And I'll just take that off the air.
Josh Allen. Don't. I don't even need a second to answer that question.
I disagree completely. He's number four of the top four on my list. He's extremely raw. He's inaccurate.
He said skill set. He didn't say
accuracy is part of a skill set. He completed 56% of his passes. If you're talking physical tools.
Josh Allen's the best.
Josh Allen has the most upside from a physical tool standpoint.
Yes.
No argument there. I agree.
Yes.
Pure size, arm strength, mobility, athleticism.
Throw on the run.
Sure.
He's Aaron Rodgers-like.
Yes, except he's much less consistent, and that's
correct.
The problem. Which is, I think you have to balance that out with production, and I think that's why I would rank the other guys over him. There are other guys that, Kyle Bowler could throw the ball 65 yards from his knees. Wasn't a good quarterback in the pros. Jake Locker had great physical attributes. Didn't work out for him. And I'm not saying Allen's going to be one of those guys, but I think based on what we saw in college, there's a better chance that he becomes one of those guys than the other three, at least in my opinion. I know Paul disagrees, and that's fine. That's why this is fun. Different people evaluate people different ways. That's why we do the show.
All four of those top guys have their own pluses and their own minuses.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of like if you go to the supermarket, do you want apples or do you want oranges or does Lance want pears? I mean, there's a little bit of a difference in each one of them. Just the way it is.
Yeah. And look, guys, I think it would be hard for someone to convince me for the Giants to pick Allen at two. I could be convinced that the other three guys are worthy of the second overall pick.
That's why I got the easy one. I ain't picking a quarterback.
Len in Columbia, Maryland. Hi, Len.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up, Len?
Hey, great ad with Beckham and Eli on Sunday.
It's funny.
I don't know how you couldn't like that ad. If you want to do a conspiracy theory, you had some roster offensive linemen there. They were all roster players, but there were some roster players who were missing.
Who? Well, hold on a second.
I just said we'll go on to something else real quick.
Well,
I just want to say if anybody wants to do conspiracy
theory,
look at who those offensive linemen were and who was missing.
Len, the spot was done about 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And if you're talking about Pugh, I got a feeling that he's probably at home doing rehab on his back.
And Richburg's probably in Texas.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, all right.
Right.
Hey,
so
let me
think they'd be in the area.
I really didn't want to talk about that, and I don't want to take too much time. I just wanted to say, you know, relative to the ad, you could get into those kind of things.
Trust
but
me,
it's really minor. You're absolutely right, Paul.
Len, no one
I'm
was
sure
more
nothing to do with the conspiracy.
Len, no one was more excited than Paul Dottino than
to
see DJ Fluker dance,
who were
okay?
Around. Hey, shout out. Quick shout out. John, Dan Salamone.
He's awful.
He's been with you guys a long time.
He's right here. He's right here.
He stinks.
Nice writer. I mean, nice writer.
He's awesome.
I'd love to hear him on the show talking to fans someday.
Oh, Len, trust me. I have convinced Dan to come on the show many times. He prefers to stay behind the keyboard, my friend.
Okay.
He's rather shy.
Okay. He's shy.
All right, great.
Now, here's the key. He's got to get a couple beers in him before you put him on the show. He'd be
John,
okay.
And then,
actually, Len, to be honest with you, it'd have to be Ohio State Buckeye Live for him to come on the program. Because then it would be 2 hours a day.
Well, see if you can get him on. It'd be fun to talk to him. He seems like a regular fan. Somebody you might meet at the concession stand at the stadium.
He's a good dude.
And or ride down the escalator with him after the game. He's probably got a lot to say.
We love Dan. He's great, and he will be with us at the combine again.
Great. John, I really kind of appreciate. I don't know if it was a throwaway line or not, but. A little earlier, maybe 15, 20 minutes ago, you had a comment where you said, let's not talk about improvement in terms about Super Bowl next year. Do you kind of remember that reference point, John?
Yeah, I do. And frankly, I believe I said the same thing a week ago. I think to expect this team to be in Super Bowl 53 is it's not impossible, but I think you're setting your goals a little bit high off a 3-13 season.
I just want to say to that comment, thank you. Because, I mean, a lot of the comments, I mean, even Mr. Mara, he says, I expect the team to be better. But he never says what better is. This is the first time that somebody is actually saying, maybe we make a five-game improvement, a five-win improvement. We win eight games. Maybe we challenge the next year, and then it's the Super Bowl in the third year. I'm not laying it out that way. I'm just saying it's probably not next year.
No, and Len, look, Pat Shurmur.
I appreciate the fact that you said that, John.
Hey, look, Pat Shurmur, I forgot which one guy said it. One of them said, look, we have to own 3-13. We can't wave the magic wand and it just goes away. That's what the record is. That's where you're working from. And Paul's right. Things can change real fast in the NFL. Look at the Jaguars this year. But it's still a very, very steep hill to climb. Try to get better. Make incremental improvement. And if you go faster than you can, great. But don't make it a Super Bowl or bust situation.
Here's my question for you then, John.
Yes, sir.
And let me preface the question by a statement, which I do all the time. I'm sorry about that. If we're not thinking about Eli for at least 2 years, if we're not committed in our mind in the management of this football team for Eli for 2 years, if we still have some question about that second year, make the change next year. End it now. make the change next year. We have got to – there's no way we go into this season without Eli – thinking about Eli as our quarterback in 2019. No, let's wait and see, you know, let's see what happens. In fact, I could see it playing out that maybe it's a one-year contract after that. Or a two-year contract after that's
well,
probably Len, not going to be a
well,
one-year.
Well, here's the thing. He could be in the plans, but that doesn't mean that plans can't necessarily change. What happens if he gets hurt in week four, misses a month, and Davis Webb steps in and goes off?
We always say barring injury. I mean, I understand that, John. But I think the commitment has got to be, this guy's our quarterback for 2 years. If you can't think that way in the management of this football team, make the change right now. Right now.
Len, I just want to be very clear here. John Mara's quote when Dave Gettleman was hired, the question was, do you expect big results for the Giants in 2018? The answer was, I expect us to be a good team in 2018. You go from last to first or first to last. Teams do that every year. And we do have some talent on this roster. We obviously have a lot of holes to fill as well. But I don't see any reason why we can't have a successful team next year. Those words, successful and good, that says to me over 500. That's what that means to me.
I agree with that.
Okay, thank you, I appreciate that, Paul. Hey, quick question for Paul. Based on our conversation yesterday, you asked me a question, do you think, I was raving about the fact that, the offensive efficiency in the Super Bowl game, 17 out of 21 of the possessions, an opportunity to score. There were some missed field goals in there. There were 15 scores. There were 17 opportunities to score, only 21 possessions. And you asked me yesterday, did I think the 86 Giants, 85 Bears, we hemmed and hawed a little bit about whether or not they could have stopped this.
Right.
I see Sunday's game as really the future of the NFL. You're going to have to be able to score a lot of points. How do you control that, Paul? From a defensive standpoint, I mean, is the fifth defensive back now?
All right,
I mean,
Len,
sort of as a starter, the fifth defensive back.
You just set yourself up, though. Honestly, you just set yourself up because what did the 2000 Giants do to the Minnesota Vikings? Shut them out 41-0. Chris Carter, Jake Reed, Dante Culpepper, Robert Smith. That offense was one of the most prolific offenses in the history of pro football. They got a goose egg at Giant Stadium. Shut out. They got their heads handed to them.
That was 17 years ago.
No, but the point still stands. That team scored like 500 points during the season. They were so far ahead.
No, but I think Len's point, though, is the game changed now to a point where that's not possible anymore.
Hey, Paul, let me say one thing about Chris Carter. He will never forget that game.
Okay, he can't.
He'll never give it up.
All right,
game will follow him forever.
All right, but
he can't give it up. That was a wonderful day at Giants Stadium.
What about with Belichick and the
1990? Even Charles Way got in on it. Charles Way scored a touchdown.
What about the 1990 team, what they did to Kelly's red gun attack, which, again, was supposed to be unstoppable? Thurman Thomas, Andre Reed, James Lofton, Jim Kelly. Can't stop this offense. They're going to run up and down the field. No huddle. They're going to wing it. They go three wides every play. They were playing the same offense that most of these teams are playing every single Sunday. And what did Belichick do?
Paul, problem. That's a great example. And let me just say something about that game, which I think was key and even carries over. Now it's 27 years later, John. Carries over to 2017, 2018. And that's the way we punished the receivers.
Yes.
When they caught the ball.
Can't really do that as much anymore.
You ask Andre Reed today, the toughest game he's ever played in. He'll say that game.
There's no question.
He'll tell you.
Mark Collins destroyed him.
Thank you, Len.
Up.
Len, we got to run, buddy.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
And I think the better example out of the Giants realm is a Super Bowl 3 years ago where you had one of the best offenses in all time of the Broncos get obliterated by the Seahawks. That, if you want to make the argument how the top defense can still beat the top offense, there's your case in point right there. And that was just 3 years ago. So,
and
the game was here.
Which it just goes to show you that the Eagles' vaunted defense was a fallacy. The Giants destroyed them twice.
Well,
then the Patriots just did the same thing the other day. That was not a truly great defense. It was not.
Their front was great. Their run defense was great. But their secondary was not.
Their back seven was not.
Their linebackers are good against the run.
Okay, but
no, I
being half a unit doesn't cut it.
I know. It's also Tom Brady, who does that to a lot of really good teams.
Well, the Giants' suspect offensive line moved the ball up and down the field for two different Sundays.
And how'd they do it? A lot of quick passes, slants, no huddle. We had that discussion last week.
Yeah.
All right, final call of the show, Ernie in North Plainfield. Hi, Ernie.
Hey, John. Hey, Paul.
What's up?
Enjoying your show.
Thank you. Thanks for listening, Ernie.
What I'd like to say is I agree with Paul. If I'd much rather see the Giants trade down, get a bunch of draft choices, rather than just take the number two pick. But assuming that they're only going to take the number two pick, my question is, do you think they're going to take a quarterback or a running back, given the cap space for Eli that they can save in year two, the immediate improvement that they get if they chose Barkley? You know, because when you add him to whoever they have, and it's going to be Eli, they would automatically be a better team. And three, Eli's dancing skills.
Number one, I don't think the Giants know what they're going to do yet. So Dave Gettleman hasn't even looked at college players yet. So the Giants have no clue what they're going to do quite yet. That's number one. Number
two, free agencies first.
Correct. That's also a good point, Paul. Number two, in my opinion, if I had my best guess, if they do not pick a quarterback, I believe they will trade down. If you're telling me they're not going to pick a quarterback and they're not going to trade down, who will they pick? I think it would be a discussion between the pass rusher Chubb and the running back Barkley. Those are the two players I think would be in the mix there. And I also think one of the person to watch in the top 10, only because I think he might be the best player at his position, even though it's not a premium position, is Quentin Nelson out of Notre Dame. I think he's that good of a football player.
Yeah, okay. The thing you got to remember if you take Barkley,
by the way.
Yeah. You know, the conventional wisdom says when you're stuck and you're that high and you're not sure what you're going to do,
take the best
defensive pass rusher that you can get your hands on, which would lead Chubb into the equation. Barkley, for me, I would seriously think about Barkley provided they did enough to retool the offensive line in free agency.
Agree.
If they
Absolutely.
Don't get
sure.
at least two, and I'm talking maybe one high-priced guy and one lower-priced guy, or even two second-tier price guys, okay, a Cameron Fleming comes to mind right away, okay, if they can do something there to fortify the offensive line going into the draft, knowing I'm still going to draft at least one more, maybe two anyway, I would seriously consider Barkley. But if that line does not have guaranteed improvement, taking Barkley doesn't make a lot of sense to me because the value is not going to be there without a better line.
Oh, without a doubt. Absolutely. Do you think that Davis has the skill set to be the next quarterback? You know, he was the fifth quarterback chosen in his draft class.
Yeah. I go back to something I think Mayock said last year about Davis Webb. He said there were five quarterbacks in last year's draft, and I'm only going to quote this because I'm tired of having people come after me saying that, you know, I'm the only one who believes in them. Mayock said last year there were five quarterbacks who had make-it skills to be an NFL starter, and Davis Webb was one of the five. I mean, you know, do I think so? Yes, but apparently that's not enough for a lot of people, so Mike Mayock
Makes
thought the same
better.
Thing.
You know? Well, again, just a lot of guys have the skills and the tools to make it as a player in the league. Doesn't mean they make it as a player in the league.
No, it doesn't. But sure. if you consider his shortcomings were about reading defenses, well, he's learned from one of the best guys who's ever read defenses in Eli Manning.
And accuracy. And, that was something, too.
But that's part of it as well.
Dealing with pressure. I think that's another thing he had issues with in college.
Yeah, he did throw like 600 passes while he was in the and he completed like 62%.
Well, yeah, but you got to understand, like half his passes were like behind the line of scrimmage in that spread system.
It was a lot of short stuff. It was a lot of short stuff in the spread system. You got to remember, too, he had sat for half a season. He had missed some time with injury. He did not actually play a full four-year college career as many of the other quarterbacks
more
get
like
to do.
Two and a half. One full at Texas
right.
Tech, one full at Cal and a half at Texas Tech. Right.
So by nature, he's not going to be fully developed in those attributes. But see, so many people who want to pick on him forget those things. You must take that into account. You must grade him on a curve because of the experience that he had in college and then project him from there. So, yes, I'm giving you an emphatic yes. I believe in the kid.
I think he can do it, but he still has a lot to prove, in my opinion.
Okay, it makes me feel better. Thanks.
All right.
Appreciate the call, man. Thank you. And we'll see. I mean, look, we haven't seen him. We've seen him in some meaningful third-string end-of-game snaps in preseason. Beyond that, it's what we saw in opportunity drills and in practice and during training camp. I've never seen him go against first team starters in practice before. So for me, I need to see more before I'm fully on board. I think he can do it. I think he's the skills to do it. Now it's just a matter of not whether or not he can when he's given the opportunity. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. Thanks to Bruce Arians for joining us. And thank you for listening and calling in on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Have a great day.